Today, Operation Uncertainty Protect, as volatility bets rise. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics with another post covering finance and proper news, and this is our weekly market update. Well, things got interesting this week on the markets as US stocks closed barely changed on Friday after wavering between modest gains and losses, which were driven by mixed bank earnings that offset cooler than expected inflation news, and all that buoyed hopes for interest rate cuts from the Federal Reserve. After briefly topping out at 4,800 points in early trading, the S&P 500 fluctuated, slipping modestly negative in the final hour before edging higher at the close. And it's worth noting that US markets will be closed on Monday for Martin Luther King Day. Expectations for a rate cut of at least 25 basis points by the Fed in March moved back up again to 79.5%, according to FedWatch, from 73.2% in the prior session. Friday's data also sent Treasury yields lower, although recent comments by some central bank officials have pushed back on any potential rate cuts. On Friday, data showed that US producer prices unexpectedly fell in December as the cost of goods such as food and diesel fuel declined, while prices for services were unchanged for a third consecutive month, in contrast to Thursday's hotter-than-expected consumer inflation reading. The headline inflation rose more than expected to 3.4% from 3.1% in the month prior. Shelter, electricity and food prices drove the overall CPI index higher in December, especially the shelter costs, which increased by more than 6%. But if you don't count food and energy price inflation, then core inflation eased to 3.9% during the same month. And of course, if you start stripping out the shelter costs from the calculation, the numbers can become quite good. The metric, though, that disregards food, energy, and shelter prices, such as the core and super core inflation does, makes little sense to ordinary folks, as everyone eats, everyone uses energy, and everyone needs shelter. Yet, for the Federal Reserve, those items are volatile, so they prefer looking past those important categories. While doing so, inflation then eased. And also note that a rise in car prices also added to the inflationary pressures last month, but their weight is lower in the calculation of the PCE index. That's why the Fed's favourite inflation gauge, the PCE index, which will be released by the end of the month, will likely be trending closer to their 2% target. So it's a bit of a number wang. But all in all, yesterday's inflation report was less than ideal, and the market reaction was pretty mixed. In fact, the US 2-year and 10-year first rose, then fell, whereas you'd expect a swift shift in dovish Fed expectations following a bigger-than-expected jump in US headline inflation. And the 2-year was last at 4.146 and the 10-year at 3.944. Therefore, you can conclude that disinflation remains the base case scenario for this year, and housing costs are expected to fall at some point, and that could counterweight the rising shipping costs caused by the Red Sea tensions and low water levels in the Panama Canal that also threatened food deflation that we saw last year. Yet, some hawkish voices are rising at the Fed at the start of this year. Fed's Loretta Mester said it's probably too early to cut rates, and Mr. Barkin also repeated that he's looking for more evidence that inflation is heading towards the 2% target. Anyway, on Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.31% to 37,592. The S&P 500 gained 0.08% to 4,783, and Nasdaq Composite rose 0.02% to 14,972. For the week, the Dow gained 0.34%, the S&P 500 rose 1.84%, and the Nasdaq climbed 3.09%. In fact, the gains for the S&P were the biggest weekly percentage rise since mid-December, and for the Nasdaq, the largest since early November. Now, looking at specific names, Bank of America fell 1.06% after its fourth quarter profit shrank as the lender took $3.7 billion in one-off charges, while Wells Fargo warned of a 7% to 9% drop in net interest income in 2024, and that sent the bank shares down 3.34%. But Citigroup rose 1.04% after reporting a $1.8 billion fourth quarter loss, and also said consumers had begun to show signs of stress, which prompted Citi to set aside more money to cover losses on souring loans. The bank said it would cut 20,000 jobs over the next 2 years, acknowledging a clearly disappointing quarter, marred by one-off charges that resulted in that $1.8 billion loss. The loss was driven by $3.8 billion in charges disclosed in the filing on Wednesday that included reorganization expenses, a reserve related to currency devaluations, an instability in Argentina and Russia, and a $1.7 billion payment to replenish a government deposit insurance fund. The bank expects to report between $700 million and $1 billion in charges this year related to severance costs and the reorganization. The lender will reduce its global workforce of 239,000 by around 20,000, or roughly 8% of staff, through to 2026, including layoffs from the sweeping reorganization, Chief Financial Officer Mark Mason told reporters. And Citi will also no longer count 40,000 jobs when it spins off and lists its Mexican consumer business in an eventual initial public offering, eventually aiming to reach a staffing level of around 180,000 employees, Mason said. Whenever an industry or company goes through these types of reductions, it's tougher morale, he told reporters. The staffing cuts will not affect revenue growth, though, he assured people. The shares of the bank, which is in the middle of a multi-year effort to cut bureaucracy, increase profits, and boost a stock that has frankly lagged peers, are up more than 1%. The fourth quarter was very clearly disappointing, CEO Jane Fraser told analysts. We know that 2024 is critical. Still, some analysts said results from the third largest US lender by assets appeared strong when all the one-off charges are excluded. Citigroup's earnings look awful, with a big loss of $1.8 billion, but the bank's underlying business showed resilience, said one analyst. The restructuring announced 2 months ago was a long time coming, said Chris Munerick, director of research at January Montgomery Scott. The question comes down to, can they execute on this restructuring in terms of really being able to grow the core business? The jury is still out. And JP Morgan Chase edged 0.73% lower after reporting its best ever annual profit and forecasting higher than expected interest income for 2024. And by the way, the S&P 500 banks index ended down 1.26% after falling as much as 1.7%. And by the way, the Dow also fell, largely due to a 3.37 decline in United Health after the company reported higher than expected medical costs, accounting for about 120 points of downside pressure on the index. Delta Airlines tumbled 8.97% after the carrier scaled down its annual profit outlook, and Tesla lost 3.67% after trimming prices of some new China models, and also they said they plan to suspend most car production at its factory near Berlin for a couple of weeks because of supply problems. Oil prices jumped higher on Friday after the US and UK forces attacked Houthi rebels. Analysts think further escalation in the conflict might propel Brent higher. Westpac Banking's head of commodity and carbon research, Robert Rennie, said markets had been too concentrated on rising global supply through to the end of last year. At the same time, the continuing deterioration of the Red Sea conflict has been underplayed in 2024, with Houthi leaders claiming they would respond to any US attack, WTI could jump above $75 a barrel, and Brent could exceed $80, he said. Brent was last at $78.41, and the WTI was at $72.81. Higher oil prices could also rekindle inflationary pressures and complicate the Fed's aim for a soft landing in the US economy if it continues. Of course, the US Central Bank last month said it plans to begin cutting interest rates in 2024. So a degree of uncertainty there. The recent rallies that had bolstered nearly every corner of the US stock market actually left energy shares behind, and bullish investors are now betting that upcoming earnings reports and rising geopolitical tensions could actually spark a rebound for the struggling group. The energy sector has slumped nearly 3% since last October, a period during which the S&P 500 surged 16%. The benchmark index rose 24% over 2023, while the energy sector fell 4.8%, the second largest drop last year among S&P 500 sectors. The sector's struggles have continued even as other economically sensitive groups such as banks and small cap stocks have benefited from investors' growing belief that the economy will be able to navigate a soft landing where growth remains stable while inflation subsides. One key reason for the sector's underperformance has been a sharp downturn in oil prices. US crude is down over 20% since last September to around $73 a barrel, pressurized by strong supplies, particularly in the US, and concerns over tepid demand from China and Europe. Right now, oil prices have been leading the stocks, and strategists at Wells Fargo Investment Institute this week upgraded their rating on the energy sector to favorable from neutral, saying oil prices will bottom with the global economy and then finish the year higher. Traders on Friday piled into US stock option contracts that would pay out if volatility jumped from the current four-year lows. Even as the S&P 500 remained within striking distance of new highs. In fact, volumes in options on the volatility index, the VIX, which are typically used to guard against stock movement gyrations, stood at 1.2 million contracts on Friday. That's a pace at the highest level in nearly 3 weeks. The index, known as Wall Street's fear gauge, stood at 12.7 on Friday. That's just above the four-year low of 1181, hit in late December, after a searing late-year rally helped boost the S&P 500 to 24% gains in 2023. And with the S&P 500 less than 1% away from its January 2022 record closing high, some traders appeared to be taking advantage of relative cheap pricing on defensive options contracts to pick up portfolio hedges. The largest VIX trade on Friday was a $16.8 million purchase of 250,000 call options, which would benefit from the volatility index rising above 17 by mid-February. I think it's one of the biggest VIX call purchases that we've seen in a while, Chris Murphy, co-head of derivative strategy at Sequentia Financial Group, said. The trade was more likely to be a defensive play, taking advantage of comparatively attractive volatility levels to add portfolio protection, rather than an outright wager on a drop in the stock market, Murphy said. It's probably a big fund that might even be leaning very long, saying, this is the most attractive hedge for us right now. The strength of hedging activity on Friday was in contrast to a generally anemic level of defensive trading in recent weeks. Another February VIX call contracts with strike prices ranging from 15 through 19 also saw heavy trading. Gold prices witnessed a significant rise on Friday as well as investors turned to the safe haven asset amidst escalating geopolitical tensions. On New York's COMEX, February futures for gold reached $2,053 an ounce. The precious metal's value is often seen as a barometer of geopolitical stability, and this increase reflects concerns over the potential fallout from the military action in Yemen. Over in Europe, European stock markets climbed higher on Friday, boosted by UK economic growth. The DAX index in Germany closed 0.95% higher. The CAC 40 in France traded up 1.05%, and the FTSE 100 in the UK rose 0.64%. Data released on Friday showed that Britain's economy grew slightly more strongly than expected in November, with the country's gross domestic product rising 0.3% in November, beating forecasts for a 0.2% expansion. Industrial and manufacturing production both expanded in November after sharp retreats the prior month, raising hopes that the country's economy, which is one of the weakest in Europe, is now on track for growth. The longer-term picture remains one of an economy that has shown little growth over the past year, ONS chief economist Grant Fitzner said. GDP bounced back in the month of November, however, led by services, with retail, car leasing, and computer game companies all having a buoyant month. Elsewhere in Europe, the French CPI was confirmed rising to 3.7% in December on an annual basis from 3.5% in the prior month, while Spanish CPI came in at 3.1%, which is a small drop from the 3.2% prior. In the corporate sector, Burberry stock slumped over 8% after the British luxury fashion brand warned on its full-year profit outcome for the second time in 3 months, blaming a further slowdown in global demand. In fact, rivals have also reported lower demand for high-end goods in key markets, including the US, Europe, and China. Most Asian stock markets moved in a tight range on Friday as investors digested mixed inflation readings from the US and China, while Japan's Nikkei 225 index continued to blast higher. Japan's stock gauge surged past 34-year highs and reached stellar heights. It was the best performer in Asia this week, rising 1.5% on Friday to a new 34-year high of 35,575. Expectations of an ultra-dovish Bank of Japan were a key driver of the Nikkei's rally, especially as markets awaited more stimulus measures in Japan following the devastating earthquake. Signs of weakness in the Japanese economy also persisted, as data on Friday showed that the country's current account was shrinking more than expected in November, and this data was preceded by soft inflation and wage growth readings earlier in the week. The Nikkei jumped more than 6% this week. That's its best weekly gain since March 2022. And the TOPIX index, which covers a broader range of Japanese stocks, was also at its highest level since 1990. But China's Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 and Shanghai Composite indices both fell, down 0.35 and 0.16% respectively, still therefore showing multi-year lows after data showed that CPI inflation rose slightly in December, and Hong Kong's Hang Seng index fell 0.53%. While broader Chinese inflation still remains deep in disinflationary territory, the mild pickup in CPI inflation spurred some hopes that consumer spending might be on a path towards recovery from COVID-era lulls. The increase in CPI was driven chiefly by higher holiday spending, particularly on travel and shopping. But whether the reading signaled a bigger recovery or was a one-off rise remains to be seen. The outlook for the Chinese economy is still relatively weak. Producer price index inflation shrank for a 15th consecutive month in December, and so focus will be now on the key fourth quarter gross domestic product data due out next week. Broader Asian markets trod water, tracking a similar overnight performance to Wall Street. Most regional stocks were also set for mild weekly losses, as growing doubts over US interest rate cuts kept traders wary of risk-driven assets. South Korea's Kospi lost 0.6%, but India's Nifty 500 index was up again to 21,908, even after index heavyweight Infosys logged a weaker profit for the December quarter. Interestingly, the firm's American depository receipts shot up 4% in overnight trade. Now in Australia, the Australian share market was weaker on Friday as the benchmark ASX 200 finished down about 0.1% to 7,498, trimming its performance over the week to 0.1%. The All Ordinaries was little changed at 7,720. Seven of the ASX's 11 industry groups closed in the red. In utilities was the worst hit, down 1.4%. Consumer staples fell 1.2%. The energy sector gained 0.5%, buoyed by the high oil prices. Beach Energy was up 2.9% to $1.57, and Santos gained 1.5% to $7.55. Uranium plays Bosch Energy and Paladin were also higher, climbing 5% to $5.09 and 1.7% to $1.20, respectively. Iron ore tumbled below $130 a ton in Singapore, extending its loss over the last week to 9%. While TD Securities said the latest China trade data surprised on the upside, with both exports and imports beating consensus, the bank does not think the numbers mark a turnaround in China's trade outlook. Gold producers climbed as investors sought the safety of the precious metal after the airstrikes, and heavily shorted stock Core Lithium actually was the best performer on the ASX 200, jumping 7.7% to 21 cents after the shares sank 17% earlier in the week. Helios was the worst performer, falling 7.6% to $1.46 after Morgan Stanley downgraded the shares to underweight. The broker also recommended selling Insignia Financial, which fell 2.9% to $2.31, and Citi cut its rating on Alumina to neutral, sending the shares 3.1% lower to $1.09. Graphite producer Syrah Resources rose 1.9% to 53.5 cents. The company said the ramp-up of its U.S. project would be hampered by the cold weather set to hit Louisiana next week, but it expects to begin production by the end of the month. And Nuix dived 13% to $1.83 after the software group said it expected to take an earnings hit in the first half amid mounting legal costs from its court battle with ASIC. And the banks were mixed, with ANZ down 0.61%, CBA was up 0.03%, NAB was down 0.19%, and Westpac down 0.22%. And finally, Bitcoin was last at 42,890, down 6.6%, showing again, buy the rumor, sell the fact. Bitcoin miners are transferring substantial amounts of cryptocurrency to exchanges, with outflows reaching a level not seen for several months, possibly indicating an increase in selling pressure. This uptick in miner activity comes amid a notable development in the investment landscape, the approval of several Bitcoin ETFs by the US Securities and Exchange Commission. The SEC's green light for Bitcoin ETFs is considered a positive step for the cryptocurrency market, as it may draw more investors to the digital asset class. These exchange-traded funds provide a regulated and potentially less risky avenue for investment in Bitcoin, which could counterbalance any negative sentiment arising from the increased miner outflows. Additionally, the Bitcoin's network hash rate, which is a measure of the computational power dedicated to mining and processing transactions, has reached new all-time highs. This surge in hash rate reflects heightened mining activity and competition, which often translates to increased operational costs for miners. As a result, miners may be incentivized to sell Bitcoin to cover these expenses, contributing to those observed outflows. And Ethereum was also down 2.73% to $2,542. So standing back, volatility rules, uncertainty rules, and I do find it interesting that some people are now beginning to protect their portfolios. Given what we know and what we expect to see, expect more uncertainty, expect volatility to increase. And as I've often said, volatility does benefit those who are the main operators in the market as they trade. But of course, volatility can be a problem for smaller investors. So sometimes not being in the market is a good thing. We'll see how this all plays out. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.